moved to Lisbon is because I knew that it was very much a crypto and Web3 hub. And when I came here for the first time, literally after 2 hours of being here, I was like, I'm moving here. It's amazing. And the reason for that is that the energy when you're in Lisbon feels actually very, very much like the energy in the 2010s in San Francisco. You have this collision of really, really amazing talent, really, really passionate, idealistic, big thinking founders and people in the industry who have congregated here. And then you have all of these people who are constantly coming here for conferences and events. And you have this really beautiful melding of all of these people, but also these serendipitous meetings, essentially, where things happen, ideas come together and things happen.
Hello and welcome back to the Women of Web3 podcast. I'm Lauren Ingram and I'm the founder of Women of Web3. We're a community and a consultancy, and we've been educating thousands of women about Web3 and sharing jobs, events, and learning resources like this podcast. In every episode, I'll be interviewing an incredible leader about their learnings. We start off by breaking down the Web3 jargon, then we head deeper down the rabbit hole. Please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps more people find the podcast. For anyone who might be a new listener to the show, we always do what we can to demystify the Web3 space and talk about not only what the jargon means, but actually what value do these products provide. And I think today's guest, Cynthia Huang, she's great at breaking down the use cases of Web3, the value of blockchain, and what it can actually do for people, because she's been in the space since 2017 when it was mainly just crypto. Cynthia is the co-founder and CEO of DTravel, which is a community-owned and operated travel ecosystem. So essentially, any host can build a direct booking site for their property, and it provides an alternative to the centralized booking systems like Airbnb. And she's going to tell you more about it in a much better way than I can. I think it's a really cool idea. We also get briefly into her journey as a digital nomad, most recently moving to Lisbon, where I met her recently at a conference. And there's a really thriving Web3 scene there. So without further ado, here is Cynthia. Welcome to the show, Cynthia. Could you tell me a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yes, I'm super, super excited. I know you've had some amazing guests on, so definitely be excited to be part of that. I'm Cynthia from DTravel. I grew up in Vancouver, but I now live in Lisbon, Portugal. And prior to moving to Lisbon, I've actually been a digital nomad since 2017, which coincidentally was when I also started working in Web3. And I actually was living in an RV for the last 7 years, so that is a tale on its own.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. And DTravel is actually my second startup, second crypto startup. I had a previous startup called Altcoin Fantasy in the crypto space, which I ran from 2017 to 2020. And I like to call that Game 5 before Game 5 existed. It was a crypto trading simulation game that helped people onboard and learn about crypto trading in a risk-free way. And I'm obviously a glutton for punishment because this is the second time I'm building in a bear market.
Wow. I mean, they do say it's the best time to build though.
True.
That's awesome. So as you say, you're now co-founder and CEO of DTravel. So I do want to come back to that shortly, but I'd love to know how you got to where you are now. So, and you've also had your previous crypto startup, Altcoin Fantasy, on the way. But what is it that's kind of been your red thread or like thing that you've been pursuing as you've gone throughout your career?
I love this question. I think what's interesting about Web3 is everybody that you talk to has such a diverse background because Web3 and crypto is so new that a lot of people come into it in all sorts of ways. And there's no one path or one background that everybody coming into the space tends to have. And I think that's actually one of the reasons why our space is so diverse and really interesting, because you have people with all sorts of backgrounds from all over the globe, bringing in their perspectives and their experiences and building this really cool culture. But for me, I would say the thread that runs over everything is just going after things I've always thought that's really interesting. And I always talk about this, but I love Steve Jobs' commencement speech where he talks about how in the moment, things don't seem to connect, but it's only when you're looking back that you see how all the dots connect together, because then you can find meaning and a pattern in how things work. And I think for me, that's always been my career. I started in the insurance and risk management industry on the commercial side. And I thought I would build my career there forever, but ended up moving to San Francisco. And there was just, if you've ever been to San Francisco in the heyday of when it was a big tech hub, there's just this infectious energy that existed there where you had all of these people with really big ideas and this unfaltering belief that they were going to change the world. And I think when you are around people like that, you observe, you absorb it by osmosis. And I think you start to think to yourself, like, why not me? You know, why am I not thinking that big? And that is so, so powerful. So having been exposed to that, I started thinking, you know, maybe I could go out and build really cool things. And how I started was in 2014, I became an Airbnb host and then ended up starting a forum as well to try and meet other Airbnb hosts, because hosting was very new at the time. And I wanted to understand, you know, how do you be a good host? What are the problems that other hosts face? What are resources that we could lean on? And it's become the largest and longest running short-term rental forum today, and it's still running. And I think that kind of stoked my fire to be an entrepreneur and to build things. And that led me kind of into the Web3 journey, where I co-founded Altcoin Fantasy, and then now I'm working on DTravel.
Amazing. I really like what you're talking about, the infectious energy of San Francisco. And I think even just as you were describing it, that is so much of what attracted me to the sort of Web3 world. So I've also been part of tech startups in the last sort of 10 or so years, including actually did some PR for a blockchain startup, but at the time I didn't find it that exciting. I couldn't really get why it was so revolutionary. But that energy and the, you know, dreaming big, and the, you're right, that sort of unshakable self-belief and belief that this stuff's going to change the world, it is really powerful to be around. And, you know, probably a little bit addictive sometimes, but you're right, it can make you also dream bigger yourself. I think that's something really powerful. I definitely see it all over you know, Web3, blockchain, etc. There is this genuine excitement around this could be a game changer. And presumably you still think that now, running your own blockchain startup.
Exactly. I think that's a beautiful way to put it, because maybe what happened in Web2 is that everybody was very idealistic. You know, when the internet kind of became very big, all of these people wanted to build businesses and ideas in Web2 around changing the world. And I think that's often how it starts. But with Web2, because the industry has matured so much, a lot of the businesses that are started today are less idealistic and more about profit. And so I wonder if Web3 is sort of naturally, because of the place we're at, where it's very early, everybody coming into the space is just really idealistic about wanting to change the world using Web3 technology and not really about the profit. And I wonder if every like web version goes through this evolution, like maybe at the end of Web3, we'll kind of go through the same cycle, and then Web4 or Web5, we'll kind of go through those cycles.
Yeah, according to Jack Dorsey, aren't we meant to be...
Jack Dorsey.
It's mad to think they will actually basically be a Web 4.0, a Web 4. And, you know, maybe generative AI is at the helm of that, I don't know. But you're right, there is a sort of certain idealism. But I think that occasionally naive optimism is also...
Is exactly what you need, right?
Yeah, kind of. Otherwise, if you thought it was going to be really hard, you wouldn't do it. So tell me more about what DTravel is. How does it work? And also, side note, I really like how beautiful the website is. Like, nobody in Web3 has a really beautiful website, and yours is stunning. So thanks. So yeah, tell me more about DTravel.
Well, first of all, thank you very much. Design is definitely something that is very core to our values at DTravel, because one of the things, having been in Web3 for so long, is that when I was in Web3 and or crypto, as we called it back then, in crypto in 2017 to 2020, I mean, everything looked terrible. Like, it almost felt like we had no designers in the space, because everything was just looked like an app from the 2000s or something. And I think we're coming out of that now, where a lot of dApps look really, really good. And the space has definitely matured, where user experience in design is becoming a core part of the experience. But I think for us, because we're really focused on more of a Web2 audience, or maybe that bridge between Web2 and Web3, design and user experience is really, really critical. And DTravel is what I like to call the merging of two areas I'm very passionate about: short-term rentals and the crypto industry and blockchain. So we are essentially an ecosystem that's really focused on the vacation rental or short-term rental industry, trying to solve some of the big problems that are holding this industry back. And I think before I talk more about the what, I think it's important to talk about the why. So I've been a short-term rental host for the last decade, and in the last 5 years especially, there's been so many problems with the space. I mean, if you spend even just like 30 seconds on Twitter, you'll see how many people are just really frustrated by the experience, both on the host and the guest side. And I think it's really a shame because it was an industry that was started and was very community centric and still is to a large extent today, where you had all of these groups of hosts coming together because they really, really believed in the mission and the vision of short-term rentals and hosting people so that it felt like a local experience that another traveler got to have from somewhere else around the world. But I think as this industry has matured and we've had a lot of the large companies really essentially own a monopoly or a duopoly, this has kind of brought a lot of problems to the industry, specifically around, you know, pricing or fees being really excessive. I think both sides, hosts and guests, feel like they're not being treated fairly. And what we saw during COVID was that there were mass cancellations. And on the host side, they really realized that reliance on these intermediaries or these platforms was not a sustainable way to run their businesses. And, you know, ownership is something that we talk a lot about in Web3. And that's really what I think is driving this evolution and adoption of Web3, is people wanting to be owners of the different ecosystems that they're a part of and also for things that they contribute to. And this is one of the most critical things about DTravel, is we want to give ownership back to everyone within our ecosystem who contributes growth. So the hosts, the guests, community members, partners, etc. And that makes us fundamentally different from marketplaces today, because they have Web2 models of being public companies and really optimizing for shareholder value. Whereas for us, our incentives are very aligned with our community members and our customers, because we all want the same thing and they're all owners. So whatever benefits us benefits them in the long run. And our approach is basically creating products that will solve different problems in the short-term rental industry space. And the first one that we have, which is really a host-focused product, is DTravel Direct. And the way that we like to explain this is it's like Shopify for hosts, where you can quickly and easily create a premium branded direct booking website that you can then share the link with guests, friends, families, etc. And then they can book directly with you instead of going through a marketplace. And the benefit for you is that you have full control over your business. Nobody can come in and say, hey, I'm going to cancel these bookings and refund the money. And the guest saves significantly because the host pays us a 3% fee on the transaction, and that's the only fees that get charged, versus on marketplaces, the overall fees are 20 to 35% depending on where you are in the world, which obviously is pretty significant.
Wow. That's huge. Mm-hmm. So I think when I met you in person in Lisbon, I think I thought it was like a sort of decentralized Airbnb, but actually it sounds like it's sort of like that, but it's sort of like, well, as you say, a Shopify, but I suppose I'm picturing like a Squarespace or whichever sort of website built.
Yes, exactly.
In a decentralized way. And so, okay, so what's the kind of blockchain element of that, of it, or like how does that part work?
Yes, a lot of people like to think of us as, you know, a decentralized Airbnb, because I think that's a very easy metaphor to understand. And it is true to some extent in terms of us wanting to disintermediate like an Airbnb, but we're taking a really different approach. So like you said, we are providing infrastructure and tooling for that direct booking between a host and a guest. And the blockchain element is on our crypto payments. So all of our crypto payments are done via smart contract. And that's very deliberate, because what happens when you run a business is that, and this is true of any business, not just a short-term rental business, when you're relying on a payment processor, you are very vulnerable, because they can hold on to your funds, or they can cancel your account, they can pull out of that market. I think there's a lot of these things that already happen today. And I think in Western countries, we feel a lot safer because that doesn't tend to happen as often, although it still does happen to a lot of smaller merchants. But definitely in developing countries, you see this a lot, where there's a lot of instability or companies end up pulling out. And now if you're relying on that payment processor, you literally have no way to run your business. And this was the same thing that happened in Russia when the Russia-Ukraine war happened. All of the hosts in Russia, Airbnb pulled out of that market, which is understandable, of course, but then those hosts had no way to run their business. So if, let's say, they had a smart contract for their bookings, they could actually continue to accept bookings from people in Russia so that they would still be able to earn a living.
Okay. So, so in the instance of if DTravel, for whatever reason, did, like, say, pull out of operating in a certain country, host in that country actually still could make use of your smart contracts, and they would still pay the transaction fees as well. So actually you'd still be able to sort of monetize as a business anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
The path that we're really trying to go down is true ownership over funds and over their business. So like you said, even if we decided or we had to pull out for whatever reason, or let's say that DoTravel didn't exist anymore tomorrow, we're trying to get to a place where hosts can continue to operate fully independent without any relying on us, because I think that's really how we get to a sustainable and also censorship resistant future, right?
And I'm just thinking about the sort of what you're saying about Airbnb and equivalent platforms, if they're taking 20-25% in fees, presumably that's got to be a lot more profitable than taking a 3% transaction fee. Like, is it very scalable as a business?
Yeah, great question. So one of the things that happens when you're running a centralized business, and especially across a lot of different countries, is you have a lot of overhead in terms of converting those funds, because now you're dealing with like Forex, you have to deal with local banking partners, all of these things. And that's really one of the major strengths of cryptocurrencies, is that you don't have those like foreign exchange things that you have to deal with. And also with smart contracts, because everything is on chain, you don't have to have an accountant or a bookkeeper come in and look at all of the transactions and like cross-check it and double-check it to make sure that things balance, because everything's on chain. And so you know that whatever transaction gets processed is a legitimate transaction. And so because of the efficiencies that we see from smart contracts, that significantly reduces the overhead that we would have to have. And I think more importantly, one of the really massive strengths of Web3 is in the community. So we have done zero marketing. We haven't done any paid marketing or anything like that. But because of our community members and a lot of the brand building that we do from doing content and working with other partners in Web2 and Web3, we actually have a very healthy pipeline coming in terms of customers. And I think that for any Web3 company, that's really what makes a company sustainable, is because you have this army of people who are not just advocates or evangelists, but are truly owners, that they're aligned with your incentives. They want to go out and promote, because if they help you grow, they're going to benefit from it too. And so that really, to me, is the power of where we get a lot of the efficiencies and scale. So we don't have to have these massive teams that we have to pay.
Amazing. So I've interviewed over 50 women for the Women of Web3 podcast, and there aren't that many sort of co-founders of pure Web3 companies, or, you know, blockchain-based companies. A lot of it might be, they might be a co-founder of a more creative focused, like, you know, say an agency type of format, or they might be C-suite, but not a founder from a pure Web3 native company. So it's actually, yeah, it's really refreshing to meet somebody that's a co-founder in this space. And I'd even count myself in that like I'm in a sort of Web3 adjacent thing. I'm in a sort of Women of Web3 is like a Web2 to Web3 community, where, you know, we use Web2 technologies like a podcast, like, and, you know, in-person events is sort of Web0. just using the technology that people feel confident with. But I'd love to know more about what inspired you to start the business, and like, did you need to go and get funding, or sort of how have you brought it about?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'll say that this is what's amazing about Web3, is that there are a lot of partners that we need in this space, right? So especially with running communities, I think that's really, really important for the growth of this industry and to bring in more people. And so the fact that there is this path for somebody who might not want to build a traditional startup in the Web3 space, like the fact that you can start a community and start to grow it and have massive success like you have, I think that's an incredible path that more women especially should lean into. And we were kind of talking about this earlier, but there's so many women in Web3, and I think there's almost this like false narrative that there's not enough women. Like, I definitely think that we need more women, but there's a lot of amazing, amazing women who are in the space, but for whatever reason, we don't get the airtime that men do. And I think it's actually more of a visibility issue than it is a pipeline issue. I think we like to use that as an excuse, especially a lot of companies and men in the space like to say, oh, there's no amazing women. But I feel like that is complete garbage, because I meet so many amazing women all the time, and there's really, really, really smart, incredible, amazing women who have been in the industry for a really, really long time. And it's just that Twitter is filled with all, or Twitter X, whatever, it's all filled with like old white men now. Or maybe, like, I guess in the crypto space, it's just like white men who dominate the narrative.
Totally. So out of interest, with Altcoin Fantasy, your previous startup, if you don't mind me asking, why that one came to an end, and also did that sort of feed into starting this one as well?
Yeah. So the reason why, unfortunately, we had to shut it down was that we were actually getting really good traction, and most of our growth was from Google Play. But Google Play had this habit of always shutting down crypto companies because they, I don't want to say they hated crypto, but they definitely were very crypto unfriendly. And we had a lot of friends who had crypto apps, and they were constantly getting banned. And for us, I think the timing, unfortunately, coincided with COVID, where things felt a little bit iffy. And so we made the difficult decision to shut that down. But that experience did, it was just so life-changing for me, because when I started it, I never thought of myself as a founder, especially a CEO. And because I went through that experience, it just really made me realize that, honestly, as long as you want to do anything, you can totally put your mind to it and just do it. Because being a founder or being a CEO, nobody kind of knows what they're doing in the moment. And I think the more companies that you run, then of course, the more experience and knowledge that you get. But you can learn anything, and you shouldn't let people tell you or dictate what you should or shouldn't do or what your limitations are. So I think that's definitely a really powerful message that more women need to hear, because there's no rule book that says if you're a woman, you can't be a CEO or a founder.
100% agree. Actually, it took me a while to get used to the idea that I'm a founder. In fact, I still feel like a bit of a fraud saying it. I think because we're such a lean team, there's only a few of us. Yeah, it does feel somehow like fraudulent to call yourself a founder if it's only small and, in our instance, bootstrapped. But like, does that mean I would only become a founder if we employ a certain number of people or take a certain amount of funding? But like, yeah, there isn't a sort of official cutoff point. And you're right that the more of it you do, and also the more like mistakes and things you make like that, and you're more like, the more you relax into the role of founder in a way of like, okay, this is where I'm meant to be.
Yeah. And also, I think that the more examples that we have, like you hadn't talked about this earlier, but the more examples we have of women in leadership who actually never had the experience of being a founder before, but they're doing it for the first time and they're excelling at it, I think those examples are really powerful, because it's almost not relatable when you see someone who has this very storied career in like the top executive positions or whatever, and then you just think, oh, of course, like they're being a founder. But if you have somebody who doesn't maybe have the experience that you would expect from somebody who's a founder, it actually becomes more relatable. And then you feel like, hey, maybe I can do it too, because I relate a lot to this person. If they can do it, then maybe I can do it too.
Completely. Yeah, that comes back to the whole, like, if you can see it, you can be it thing. And
yes.
And you're right on that visibility point of women in the Web3 space, that yes, there are female leaders and yes, there are women in this space, but we just don't hear nearly enough about them. I think also maybe I think sometimes not even just who's on stage at events, but who's also attending events would give this slightly more skewed view. I suppose we don't really have enough data as to how many people actually work in this space. I really like to see figures as to what the gender split is in a typical Web3 company or Web3 startup, I suppose. Oh, I wanted to come back briefly to the Altcoin Fantasy, just because it sounds like a really cool idea. And I like the fact that it was sort of education focused and a sort of crypto trading simulator, because that also sounds like it's quite needed and probably also maybe almost like especially for women, because that's something we just keep hearing from the community, is like feeling a bit too nervous to sort of start actually transacting because they don't understand it yet, or there's this feeling of needing to know enough. And so I think something like a simulator helps deal with that. Do you know what your kind of split of male and female users was?
I think it was pretty heavily like 90% male and 10% female. But I also think, you know, this was from 2017 to 2020, and there were a lot more men at the time. Mm. Now I think it's a little bit more balanced, although it still does skew heavily more male, especially in the trading space versus, let's say, working in Web3. Mm. But like you said, I think Boys Club, obviously Women of Web3, the more communities and resources that we have like this are really geared specifically towards women to demystify, but also normalize the experience of onboarding and how crazy it is. Then the more people will feel like, okay, well, my experience is normal and it's okay that I'm going through this.
Yeah, that's completely, like, I remember saying that to a few people after I'd almost had my little sort of Web3 baptism. And talking about how I just hadn't been able to sleep for like 2 weeks, and you think maybe you're getting it wrong, but also it's just so exciting, and you just can't stop like, you know, refreshing and like, you know, reading stuff on Discord, and it's quite sort of all engrossing. Learning about this stuff, and as you say, sometimes it's also the kind of, is it supposed to be like this? Am I getting this completely wrong? But it is quite thrilling in that sense. And briefly, what you're saying about these different women's groups, it's feeling like they're starting to be a slightly clearer delineation in a good way of what these different groups offer. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. If SheFi feels like it's more purely about the sort of cohorts of their courses, which is really quite technical, it sounds like. I haven't gone through the SheFi cohort, but I'd like to at some point. But it sounds like it is quite focused on decentralized finance and blockchain. There's also things like, there's one local to us called London Women Leading Web3. It's a network that I'm also part of, but that's more of a sort of closed system of things like, you know, sort of private lunches, and it's for women that are already working in the space in some kind of senior way.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
that's been really valuable as well, of the sort of connecting up function. And then something like Women of Web3 is a bit more of a kind of, generally speaking, we're more on the beginner end in terms of how people approach us or what they need from us. And again, the stuff like having a podcast, I think people find that really helpful for just being able to like hear about this stuff as they go on that learning journey, and before they're quite ready to start actioning more of it, or maybe start applying to work in this space. And then also something like Boys Club, I hadn't actually listened to their podcast until quite recently. I really liked it, and it does play quite a different role to this one, in the sense that is a bit more like mm-hmm. playful, jokey, but, you know, a bit sort of sarcastic and a bit more sort of commentary on the internet in general, like internet culture. And actually, you know, Web3 does go so hand in hand with internet culture, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. I mean, I think that Web3 is quite unique in that it's probably the only industry where memes are actually very welcome. Like, it's a big part of the culture. Yeah. And it's this beautiful but super, super weird industry that I absolutely love.
Yeah. I know that in your talk, when I met you earlier this month in Lisbon, I know you were doing a talk on why just building for Web3 will never lead to adoption. I thought that was a really interesting sort of provocation. So what do you think we're maybe getting wrong at the moment? Or what kind of thing do you think people are maybe wrongly building for?
So I think one of the challenges in the Web3 space for us building for adoption has really been around user design and infrastructure. For the last, 7-8 years, we've really focused on building infrastructure for the industry. So building out blockchains that can scale and handle the transactions that we need, having tooling that makes it easy for developers to build really good apps. And I think we're at a place where we actually have solved infrastructure for the most part. Like, it's fairly easy to transact on L2s and some L1s. And it's fairly easy to launch a dApp now with a lot of developer tools that exist out there. And now where we really need to move to is building consumer apps. And I think because it's natural that when you live in the Web3 space and you love Web3 people, like, you know, we're very much a very tribal group of people. We love the in-talk. We love hanging out with just Web3 people. And I, again, think this is like the only industry I can think of where you want to hang out with people in your industry almost exclusively, which is really funny. But what that does is that you end up living in a bubble, and you keep wanting to build cool apps for the type of people that you know and for yourself. But really, the only way that we get to adoption is by solving problems in Web2, but with a Web3 solution. Because that's really what Web3 was designed for, right? It was to take structural problems that exist in Web2 and using Web3 technology like blockchain, cryptocurrencies, maybe NFTs, to really solve some of those issues around ownership, data, control, privacy, all of those things. But we haven't really been doing that. I mean, we've kind of solved some issues with DeFi in terms of allowing people to be their own bank. But even that, it's limited to such a small subsection of people who understand how to use DeFi, just because it's so complex. And so for us to even take DeFi and make that really usable for the rest of the world so that they experience the benefits of essentially like being the bank themselves and unbanking kind of centralized banks is for them to have this really easy onboarding experience where they don't really need to know how DeFi works. They just need to know, okay, I can put up some money and loan it out to some people. I can be very confident that because of code, that my money's not going to get, you know, stolen by somebody else, that if I put in this money, I'm going to get this much interest back. And so I can escape the structures of Web2 that exist and bank myself, but not have to deal with any of the complexity of it. And so I think really for us to get to this next cycle and this next evolution of Web3, it has to be really focused on consumer apps and reimagine how we think about a lot of the apps that exist today using Web3.
I really like how you were talking about DeFi, and I wish more people would speak about it in that much more human way. Also, just briefly on Lisbon, just because I was saying that's where we met earlier this month, is there quite an active Web3 scene there?
Very much. So part of the reason that I moved to Lisbon is because I knew that it was very much a crypto and Web3 hub. And when I came here for the first time, literally after 2 hours of being here, I was like, I'm moving here. It's amazing. And the reason for that is that the energy when you're in Lisbon feels actually very, very much like the energy in the 2010s in San Francisco. You have this collision of really, really amazing talent, really, really passionate, idealistic, big thinking founders and people in the industry who have congregated here. And then you have all of these people who are constantly coming here for conferences and events. And you have this really beautiful melding of all of these people, but also these, what is it that Google calls serendipitous meetings, essentially, where things happen, ideas come together and things happen. And you know, as much as we are an industry that really thrives on being fully remote, it's really hard to replicate the magic of what happens when you come together. And so I think that Lisbon is one of those few places where there is a hub and you can make things happen when you are here.
I really like that. And I've definitely felt that for like periods of my life. And yeah, things like working in tech startups in Berlin. And yeah, I think you just described it really well, that excitement, that infectious energy that you talked about before is just, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just pretty amazing. And so I can completely understand why you'd move there. And also it has much better weather than London.
I know, I'm going to keep trying to convince you to move here alone.
Okay, I'll put it on my, I'll put it on my to-do list. But I mean, I can definitely imagine spending more time there with coming to things like, you know, Web Summit and Newconomics, and as you say, quite a few tech-focused conferences. So, it definitely feels like there's a sort of thriving digital nomad scene. I'd love to know briefly actually about your digital nomad journey, as it were. So have you lived in lots of different places, or have you sort of spent long periods in just a few places? How has it panned out?
Probably a mixture of both. So I was spending a lot of time in Singapore and Hong Kong prior to COVID because we were actually a Hong Kong-based startup, and I went through the Singapore accelerator called Longhash for the last startup, which is an incredible experience. And also like kind of hopping around to different parts of Europe, staying in some different parts of Asia. So I think just, I love traveling. It's incredible. So I feel very blessed that I get to actually work in the travel industry today.
For years, I was convinced I wanted to sort of go and work in travel because I was also obsessed with it. I think I've sort of finally slowed down a bit now in my 30s. And I think also there are fewer places on my sort of dream list of, well, it sounds really ridiculous that I've been to a lot of the places that were on my dream list, but I've almost like...
Oh, that's amazing.
But yeah, it's a good thing, but it means that some of my curiosity has been satisfied. But for years, the more I did it, the more it would feed the like, now I need to go and see more.
Yes. Oh my gosh, yes. Because I feel like the more that you travel, you get addicted to it. It's like getting tattoos, right? You get one tattoo and you want to have like 100, but you just realize, oh, there's so many amazing places and I haven't had this experience and that experience. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, like, were there any favorites that you have that you've traveled to?
Cambodia was a real favorite. I just found the people there incredibly friendly. It's such a stunning country, and also the food. I was just completely obsessed with the food. So I love anything with sort of coconut, lemongrass, ginger, lime, like amazingness all together. And also quite sweet, actually. There's quite a lot of sweet stuff. And then also like Vietnamese coffee is also like their sort of equivalent there.
Oh, yes.
Coffee and condensed milk, so good. And just...
You know what's interesting about, I think, traveling is, I don't know if you had ideas about Cambodia before you went, but when you travel somewhere, you just realize how shaped we are by media, where we think that a place is going to be like something, and then we go there and we realize that our understanding is actually so limited, and that what we see in the media or what we read about is actually nothing like the experience of being there. And I think that's really the beauty of travel and why community focused anything is really ultimately the best, because you're getting that real experience instead of being driven by what we hear in the media or what people want to tell us.
Exactly. You're getting the sort of, you know, hear it from the horse's mouth is like people's real experiences and yeah, that sort of real life connection. So
exactly.
Just briefly, we like to sort of end on a piece of advice for the community. Are there any sort of frameworks that you suggest following, or like people to follow, or anything like that you would suggest to with the Women of Web3 community as to kind of like, you've got to go read this, follow this, try this, anything along those lines?
I'm a huge, huge fan of the Bankless podcast. Some of the episodes do tend to be a little bit technical, but I think that for anybody who really wants like a quick intro into, especially the Ethereum community and like different things that are happening, I think they do really, really amazing analysis of different trends that are happening in the industry, really, really in depth. I mean, those guys are super, super smart. I would also, something that I think, again, makes us very unique in this industry is that we are so open and friendly. And so if there's literally anybody that you want to connect to, if you just reach out on Telegram, Discord, Twitter, I mean, you won't always get an answer, but I would say more often than not, people will respond. And that kind of power is incredible, because you can connect with somebody, ask them a bunch of questions or ask them about their journey, learn from them, connect with them, and potentially even make a really, you know, powerful, genuine connection. And so, especially for women, I think we're so afraid to ask. Like, this is definitely something that I've had a hard time with. Especially in my first startup, I didn't want to bother people. And so I never asked for favors. But now I'm trying to be a lot more open to asking for things. And that's really made a world of difference, because people are so willing to be friendly and to be helpful. And so definitely lean on that, because I could see that as this industry matures, that might not be the case anymore. But for right now, that's such a beautiful, beautiful, powerful hack.
You're right. I think people are so willing to help at the moment. And you're right, because we are still quite scrappy as an industry. There is a, yeah, as soon as you start asking around, people are very happy to like put you in touch with the right people, or yeah, give their own advice, anything like that. So I've really enjoyed our conversation today. So lastly, Cynthia, where can people find you?
So our website is dtravel.com. We're dtravel or dtravel DAO, DAO on all socials. And then for myself, I'm Cynbear. So CYNB3AR across all the different platforms. And if you want to connect with me, definitely feel free to reach out or connect with Laura, and then she can send you my way. But this has just been really incredible. Thank you so much for having me. And I feel like I always love our conversations. They just kind of fly by.
Oh, amazing. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for listening to the Women of Web3 podcast. I've been your host, Lauren Ingram. Please do give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps more women, more people find the show. Check out our website, womenofweb3.co, to come and join our talent collective and get your profile seen by potential Web3 employers, or you can choose to be anonymous if you prefer. If you're at a company that's looking to understand Web3 better, or you want to support women in this space, do get in touch with us on our website. And if you've got any questions, any comments, tweet us at womenofweb3co or find us on LinkedIn, and we'll see you next Tuesday morning.